You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 13th, 2013. And Riley, what's that? You say there's a new Call of Duty game in town? Take me to it.
Good boy.
Good boy, Riley.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. My name is George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a humble little place where we like to talk about games, society, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, today little independent games.
We do, independent games. We're talking about a haunting, if you will. Yeah. A haunting experience. We're talking about Call of Duty Ghosts.
Yeah.
This is the latest game in the Call of Duty franchise. It feels like these come out every couple months.
It's too bad it didn't come out during Halloween.
That would have been good, yeah. We could have
this even... is our spooktacular Halloween special.
Yeah, we would have had even more ghost puns in the episode than normal. So this week on the show, like all regular debrief shows, we'll be going through the mechanics of the game, our thoughts on that before moving into the story. But as always, I'd like to start these questions, or rather, I'd like to start these podcasts by asking... what are your expectations going into something like this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a Treyarch. Mm-hmm. Or no, this is an Infinity Ward.
Infinity Ward, yeah.
This is Infinity Ward's first foray after losing a bunch of people and the whole...
Actually, no, I think Modern Warfare 3 was...
Oh, was it really?
Was post...
Oh, wow.
Was post-Exodus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it just me or... I mean, this is... Okay, now we're getting a little ahead, but does this feel really different to you than Modern Warfare 3?
I never played Modern Warfare 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I played both the Black Ops games and the last... I guess the last one... Maybe last Infinity Ward game I played was Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah, wow, okay.
But you are right. This is the Infinity Ward year.
Yes.
And these, you know...
In the perpetual cycle. Trading off.
And I think, I guess starting from there, it had been a long time since I played an Infinity Ward one.
Mm-hmm.
And,
The memories just came flooding back.
Yeah, it's like, this feels great. There are some small differences, but... I feel like I may not be expert enough to, like, render a judgment.
And that probably goes for me, too. I'm sure I'm mostly thinking in terms of Black Ops.
Yeah. I mean, some things are different. Like, the Treyarch games, you can dive to prone, kind of like dolphin dive forward.
Sort of slide in. Yeah.
And this one, they made some concessions. Like, you can actually do a running slide, but it's not a forward diving prone.
Right.
I just remember a lot of times trying to kill and being killed by people completely horizontal in the air.
In multiplayer. Yeah.
Shooting while they're diving.
And you're just rubbing it in with that kill cam afterwards.
So that's different. But I mean, there are certain things that, like, every year, like a, you know, like a dutiful gamer, I come back to Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some things, though, like, even after going back to it every year, are still impressive. Like, this late in the game, seeing that really smooth 60 frames per second frame rate, like, it is noticeably different.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's faster. Like, it kind of brings you back to the times when, like, Quake ruled the world.
Yeah.
Like, games used to be fast. Like, games are usually kind of slow these days.
Yeah, definitely.
Compared.
I mean, shooters for sure. And I think one of the reasons is oftentimes now you're running around being clunky to get from cover to cover.
Yeah.
So that slow movement lets you be a little bit more strategic in combat, whereas Call of Duty has never really been an adherent to that sort of motto.
Yeah.
So you're right. The speed is something that can be exciting, especially when everything is blowing up around you, and it's kind of cool.
They got that roller coaster effect, which is in full effect.
Yes, definitely.
Starting from, like, minute one of the game.
It opens up with, like, rockets from space.
Yeah.
I guess they're like giant metal rods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rods. And that basically create huge earthquakes and craters and stuff. And, you know, of course, you live through one of those sequences. So, and, you know, that stuff is still impressive, I think. And this is also interesting because this is one of the first split generation games.
Yep.
Neither George nor I have a PS4 or an Xbox One, so we played it on the PS3. But, you know, still looking at it, I don't know. I mean, it's just very impressive. Like, what they're able to do from a spectacle perspective is... I always am impressed by
definitely.
Modern Warfare games.
And I also think that even going into every iteration, there's always a few little things that I think are added that I really appreciate.
Yeah.
One of the things that stood out to me as particularly nice was the way that they did peeking out of cover, which was a really soft way of of letting you know that you can lean without giving you a specific lean button. Yeah. So in this game, when you're near a corner, if you hit the button that lets you zoom in, mm-hmm. then it'll give you a little notice on your reticle that you'll be leaning left or leaning right. Yeah. Then you'll zoom in while leaning out that direction.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is a really nice touch. And it's something Battlefield 4 does as well. And I guess it's probably just the thing that most shooters do now. But for some reason, I noticed it in particular in this game as a nice touch.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that they're looking at their competitors and also just kind of looking at the landscape of what you might want to be doing. Yeah. I don't know, I felt like I was kind of going to cover a fair amount in this game, and that was probably one of the reasons why, because I knew I would be able to peek out a little bit, if you lined it up correctly. But it's still not the snap to cover, which is, I find kind of nice. I mean, so many shooters these days, you do automatically stick to cover, and it's not that same feel. So it's nice from a variety's perspective, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Let's talk, I think we should talk a little bit about Riley, good friend Riley.
The best character in the game.
Well, it is the best character in the game. I honestly believe that. Yeah. I think it's easily the best new mechanic in the game, for sure.
Yeah.
Riley is the infamous dog that was displayed at E3 and everyone sort of got in a tizzy over.
Had a big splash on Twitter.
Whole lot of, memes. Yeah, Call of Duty dog, right?
Yeah.
Twitter.com/Call of Duty dog.
Yeah.
Great, awesome. One of my favorite, like, I don't know if you'd parody, I guess, parody Twitter.
Yeah, parody accounts. Yeah.
And it was also something that they focused on in a lot of their marketing campaigns as well. There's the...
They went pure Molyneux and it was like...
There's that GIF where you see them, like, opening and closing the dog's mouth as if it's like a revolution in video game production.
They put a mocap suit on a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
And then had it run around.
All that being said, it is, like we were saying, the best new feature of the game, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
The moments when you are controlling Riley through his little, like, camera HUD, really awesome, and makes me sort of wish that they let me play as Riley for larger segments of the game.
It's definitely very, very narrow, like, okay, we're gonna let you have this dog control for a little bit, but probably don't want to let you have it for that long, or else you'll start finding ways to, like, break the game, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there are, even in moments when you can't control him directly, there are segments where you just sort of sick him on people.
Yeah.
And then he sort of goes around and he pounces on them.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I think you're probably better off just shooting whatever you're pointing at.
Yeah.
But there are moments when, you know, in a high, tense, or chaotic scenario, maybe you see someone flanking you.
Yeah.
You'll send Riley after them, and then, you know, calm down and rest, knowing that, you know, your canine friend has got this one.
Well, it's kind of like a... Riley's kind of like a delayed grenade. Like, you, like, point it at something, and you can kind of then forget about whatever you're pointing it at, because that thing's going to be gone.
It's like a homing missile.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and
homing missile with teeth.
It is. I mean, he runs up to them and rips their throat out.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal, actually. Yeah.
So I think with that in mind, I could see why they limited its use.
Yeah.
Because the idea of you know, imagine instead of having it being a dog, they just gave you a homing missile.
Yep.
That you could use every 30 seconds, and it would go off and kill wherever, regardless if they're behind cover or not.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be within a certain distance, but Riley's a very effective sidekick.
Yeah.
My problem is that he really only appears in a few missions in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Like, there are huge swaths. I remember at one point, I think we were getting a little bored at this point. We were like, where's Riley?
Yeah.
We need to bring Riley back. He's like the best part, and you really feel his loss.
Yeah, yeah. And at that point, you know, we hadn't seen him for a long time, and at a certain point you get back to the home base and, like, Riley jumps in the truck and you're like,
Riley, I felt it was like a scene out of Air Bud. We were just cheering his return.
Yeah, and I think there's something, it's the novelty of it too, because if you think about it, like you were saying, mechanically it is essentially a homing missile. Like, it doesn't really act like a dog, you know? Yeah. I mean, it just looks like a dog, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, the visuals are pretty nice, and they clearly mo-capped a dog. Like,
yep.
It was, like, the only time... Was this the first Call of Duty where you can actually, like, physically control a dog? Because dogs have been part of Call of Duty for a long time.
Yeah. Usually, you, like, trigger a thing where they'll attack you, or you can sort of have them swarm on somebody. But, yeah, as far as I understand, it's the first time, one, that you can sick on them as detailed as you can, as opposed to just calling them.
Right.
And two... the ability to actually control them.
Yeah.
Controlling them, I would say, is a unique experience and is not like homing missile at all.
Yeah.
Because that's very much more like, you're almost more like a really small, like a small person with a knife. You know, like you're like a heavily armed child, basically.
Right.
Because he, like, creeps through the grass.
There's, like, a lot of sneaking sequences.
And he's very fast. Like, you know, there's a... I almost kind of wish that they had gone third person with controlling the dog. Because I think they could have had a really cool sort of lay of the land and maybe been more liberal with the use of that particular mechanic. Yeah.
But, I mean, that... Like, we ran into this thing so many times when we were playing where you think maybe you should be able to vault over this cover or maybe you should be able to walk down this hallway, but really you're just blocked by, like, a waist-high chair that you can't get over.
Right.
And, like, I think even making that... And that was, like, doubly the case when you're Riley, because theoretically you could jump higher and run faster than humans.
Yeah, because you're a fucking dog.
Yeah, exactly. But then when you do it, it's like, oh, there's an invisible wall. And
yes.
Really, like most Call of Duties, you're basically going down a funnel for the levels.
So this is why... well, I should say, this generally pissed me off, I think, probably more than I've ever been pissed off by that.
Yeah. Did this feel more constrictive? I think it was more constrictive than Blops.
Yeah, maybe it was just we were trying to break it
a
little bit more than normal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I felt much more restrained. And especially, I think the idea that they would not have Riley in more of the game for fear that they would break something.
Yeah.
I think is offensive because I don't think there's anything in the game to break. Like, what is it exactly that they're scared of by including Riley here? That I'm going to just mow through the enemies? Because I kind of already am. Like, unless I do something stupid, that's not an issue.
Yeah.
Are they scared that, like, what, I'm just going to hide back? Like, what offended me the most is that I think that they knew that the dog was the coolest aspect of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yet because they were so scared that they would create an experience that wasn't exactly how they imagined it, they pulled that away. And I thought that was, I don't know, one of the most offensive.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of, like, it's so hard to, like, make sure that the player is looking at this building that's coming down or something, because, like, half the time we are kind of, like, and this is, like, also the case with most Call of Duties, like, there's little collectibles in the environment that we looked for in every single level. We found, like, one, even though we were going...
Rourke files.
Yeah, we were looking for these Rourke files that were all over the game, supposedly. We found one, and then...
I think at least twice we were like, oh, I'm going to go down here looking for a Rourke file. You have left your allies behind.
Yeah, and then an insta-fail out of the level. And so it's just like we can't... With so much freedom, people will just miss all of these scripted things, which, I mean, of course is true. And, like, you can tell the scripted things are triggered, you know, when you get to the door rather than kind of ongoing in real time. Yeah. So, like, yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the usual for Call of Duty. But I think in this one... I don't know. I felt similarly. I felt like this was a little bit more constrained.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're leaving the battlefield type thing. Yeah. A friendly fire will not be tolerated. Instant fail out of the level. Yeah.
I mean, that I kind of get, because I think the first time we experienced that, we shot Riley.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Or then I think at another point we put, like... Oh, actually, I thought that was kind of funny. At one point, we put a, like, a timed detonator bomb on one of our own vehicles.
Right.
And although it didn't explode now,
it
would eventually set up the condition where we would fail later.
Right.
I thought that was a little dumb, too.
Well, I mean, it's... You can tell we've been playing GTA or, like, Far Cry 3, right? Because we're like, okay, what we're going to do is put a bomb on our own truck, jump out of the truck, detonate it, and then that will cause more chaos. You know, it's like,
yeah, that's true.
And it's just not afforded in this game whatsoever. It's just not... I don't know. It's a harsh reality to get back to, basically. Yeah.
I mean, I also don't think I can separate the idea of being railroaded in that way from what I also thought were really obnoxious reminders of how to play the game.
Yeah.
We were almost at the game's end, and it was like, press R1 to duck, or you know, whatever thing that we had to do.
Every time there was, like, a melee opportunity or like, a, you know, place this explosive charge here.
Right,
was,
or, like, you know, snipe them with the other thing. Like, everything would wait for you to press this button, and you'd get a huge prompt on the screen. Press triangle to go into super sniper mode.
Right. I mean, I feel like that's, like, a long-time Call of Duty thing, though.
Yeah. So you're a bit forgiving of it, in the sense that, like, the...
It's not that I like it that much, it's just that stuff didn't surprise me. I mean, the stuff that surprised me more was somewhat, like, the linearity of it, and also coming from... Well, I guess the linearity is one thing to dwell on. Coming from Black Ops 2, like... And, like, Black Ops 2 quietly had some of the most interesting moral decisions of the entire, like, AAA space last year.
Yeah.
Because they didn't telegraph it at all.
Yep.
Like, you can make decisions in that game without even knowing that they're decisions, and then all of a sudden the ending is different.
Yep.
And, you know, so you could do other things. You can, like, fail certain missions or quasi-succeed, and then it branches off for a separate one. And, like, I don't think any of that stuff was present here.
No, I don't think so.
And it's, like, really starting to show the difference between, like, the Infinity Ward track and the...
Yep.
I mean, I honestly feel like Black Ops 2 was, like, not only just a better constructed game from like a level design perspective, but also just philosophically, like how the choices are in there. It was just a lot more, it did a lot more than any other Call of Duty franchise has done since Modern Warfare 1.
Yes, yeah, I totally agree. And I actually, this goes into the story a bit as well, so...
Before we go into spoilers, though, there were some things that I was kind of surprised at mechanically, like, not as much fancy shit. Like, there was no, like, crazy, like, you can see through wall type guns. There was no, like, RC cars. There were very few kind of over-the-head plane moments. I mean, there was a but, I mean, they weren't, you know, too wild. It was mostly just...
I love the RC cars, by the way.
I mean, it was like, Black Ops 2 got really out there, you know, by the end. Like, shooting through walls and, like, you know, having, you know, different tagging abilities and stuff. This is just, like, a much more straightforward game. And also, the other thing I felt like is, I feel like there wasn't... I feel like the game wasn't as hard as Black Ops 2 either. Like,
yeah, I feel
like
we
barely died at all. And usually, there are always some levels in Modern Warfare where, like, I'll just die 5 times in a row. Some random mortar will hit me or something.
Yeah, we should say we were playing on normal.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they were actually recommending hard. Is that right? Or
I don't know. I booted it up and the default was, I forget what they call it, regular or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, regardless.
Yeah, and so I just clicked into it.
On regular
Yeah, I just, I mean, this game just felt like much more of an experience rather than a challenge. It's just seeing that go back and forth from Black Ops to I guess the Modern Warfare series, you know?
The exceptions being the grenades,
yes,
which for some reason were incredibly deadly to us but completely useless to against our enemies.
Yeah, except we decided that the what was it, the chaff or the flashbangs,
the flashbang,
were somehow the best grenades.
Those were like godly. You throw them into a room and everybody would duck and like sort of stand up and wobble for like a minute.
Yeah, less melee, I felt like. And also, there was
the classic Call of Duty instant kill.
Yeah, one hit, one kill. But, like, Black Ops has got to the point where it was almost, like, weirdly fetishistic in its, like, up-close violence.
Yep.
You know, like, people... Remember, like, you would... Especially, in, like, in the Vietnam levels, like, you'd just be, like, jamming knives into the side of guys' throats. Yeah, you know, like, it wasn't, like, really, like, scripted animation. There's that one point in, I think, Black Ops 1 where he put glass inside the guy's mouth and then punched him. Do you remember that?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, like, I mean, Black Ops got, like crazy violent. And I feel like this one was a lot more cartoony violent, you know? Like, right. Even when you would stab people, it was, everyone was in body armor. It was just kind of the canned animation. Yeah, it wasn't, like, custom ones. Yeah, like, it was much more, like, running gun.
It's all violent, but...
Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't violent, but it was, I just felt like they took a step back from... And I think the Black Ops series, that was kind of the point of that series.
Yeah.
You know, more character-driven and more, like, you know, taking from Vietnam movies and stuff like that. Anyway. I mean, I think we should probably go into the story.
All right, spoilers from here on out for Call of Duty Ghosts. I'm going to say right now, I don't think you really need to care.
Yeah, guess what? America's under attack. Guess what?
This is weirdly familiar. Okay, so you know what? Let's start this over.
Yeah.
Let's go back to what you were saying earlier about how this compares to Black Ops 2.
Yeah.
How Black Ops 2 was more mature, I guess, in a way, in terms of the mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say that's absolutely 100% true of the story as well.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. And, like, again, I'm someone who... I sort of call myself a Call of Duty sympathizer in the sense that the way I always describe this series is that there are some people over at Activision that know what they're doing and want to make a game that's mature about real stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another group of people on that same team who don't give a shit and just want to make a crazy over-the-top shooter.
Yeah.
And every time you play the game, you're getting both of those.
Mm-hmm.
So in Black Ops 2, there were scenes that were absolutely pointless and really overly dramatic. But there are also themes about... blowback, you know, American political blowback, and capitalism, and the way that capitalism affects third world countries, specifically countries in Latin America,
like decentralization of protest,
like fear of technology, and like concerns in the public over the increased amount of drone usage in the United States. Like, these are themes that are in Black Ops 2, and they're not even subtle. Like, they're there up in front and center.
Yeah.
And the fact that we ask these quote-unquote sort of our presumed bro audience for Call of Duty to engage with those themes, I think is really interesting. Those themes are completely out the fucking window for Call of Duty Ghosts. There's, like, this game is about nothing.
Yeah.
This is one of the most bullshit
yeah.
Call of Duty stories we've had for a really long time.
Yeah.
Probably since the first Modern Warfare.
Well, at least the first Modern Warfare had Russians.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I mean, because, okay, what is the story of Ghosts?
So, for some reason, there's some sort of oil crisis in the Middle East.
Right.
Therefore, the power dynamics in the world change, mm-hmm. and Central and South America form this federation.
Right.
Aptly titled The Federation,
yeah.
and use their power to wage war against the United States for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and also it seems like there's maybe some sort of corporate interest involved there too. Like, I don't know. At a certain point, they hijack a orbital weapon.
Yeah, that, the Odin.
Yeah, yeah. The Odin that basically drops huge metal rods into the earth.
Yes.
As dummy bombs, basically, that create yeah. earthquakes. There's not even much pretense to explain yeah. why this could even happen or how.
And I also thought it was really strange, too, that it seems so very similar to the Black Ops 2 storyline.
Yeah.
In that, so in the Black Ops 2 storyline, there's this mega menace, which is the force that the main villain is mm-hmm. sort of a part of, right? Like, so there's a larger geopolitical conflict going yeah. on, but it's also about this interpersonal conflict between this one guy who wants revenge.
Yeah.
That's the exact same storyline in Call of Duty Ghosts.
Yeah, it's true.
There's one guy who yeah. wants revenge yeah. for some shit that happened a really long time ago
right.
that was not anyone's fault.
Right.
And he fuels this sort of war against the ghosts, and that's ultimately what this whole thing's about.
Yeah.
I mean, the Federation is just a weird backdrop
right.
to make an excuse for why there are loads of enemies you're fighting.
Mm.
But the actual guy that you're fighting himself, this Rourke fellow, is just this, like, blindly
right.
vengeful character that we've just got very little backstory to.
Also, strangely enough, like, brainwashed and becomes a sleeper agent like Mason in Black yeah, Ops.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And he takes someone and
yeah.
makes more sleeper agents.
Yeah. It's a strange overlap without any of the arguably little nuance there even was in Black Ops.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, you don't always want to say the Russians have to fight the States, but, like, I mean, honestly, like... This could never possibly happen.
No, not
like,
even a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. it's just, it's weird that would be the way that they would set it up.
And they never bother really explaining the sort of ideological
or yeah.
political motivations behind...
Why wouldn't the Federation just get rich and sell a bunch of oil to the States?
Right, and
yeah.
it's also really weird. Yeah, that's yeah. a great point.
Right.
Yeah, hello.
Why would they attack their best customers?
And then you also have this, like, really weird, like, the geography doesn't make any sense.
Nah.
So there's this, like, no man. Land
yeah.
that they call it in like Southern California.
Mm.
Why did they like bomb Irvine? There's nothing there anyway. I
yeah.
don't know.
Yeah.
And then you sort of traverse the rest of the world, but I'm not entirely sure, based upon the military capabilities we see both sides have, why they still fight at all. Like, what, you know what I
right.
mean? Like, normally you would expect some sort of detente going mm-hmm. on here. Like, there's
right.
there maybe there's a DMZ somewhere. I don't know, but it doesn't make any sense why people are fighting you, where and when they're fighting you.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you say that in the context of Call of Duty, that's saying something. Because usually it's just like a bunch
yeah.
of dudes running at a bunch of other dudes. But yeah, very strange. But they do that all because it's all, like you're saying, it's all a backdrop to this interpersonal story.
Yes.
Like the main character, what is it?
It's Rourke.
Rourke is the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
Logan is the person that you're playing as.
Mm-hmm. Hesh is his
By
brother.
The way, silent protagonist.
Yes, yep.
That's kind of strange, I think. Like,
yeah,
not
I know.
Even all
totally
the other
great.
Ones are.
Yeah. I thought we were done with that. I thought that
yeah.
was behind us.
And then his brother.
Hesh.
Hesh. And then his dad.
Elias.
Yeah.
Who's probably, like, the worst father in the Call of Duty. Which, by the way, father issues
yeah.
also pulled from Black Ops.
Yeah, like, the elder...
Yep.
Well, what was Mason's dad? I don't know. Whatever. Like, there was, like, definitely,
right.
like, father and son dynamic in Black Ops. And it's just, the writing is very, it's not subtle at all. You know,
mm-hmm.
dad's like, I love you guys, son. That's why I trained you. And
yeah,
like, he's
exactly.
like secretly training the kids to be ghosts, which are this, you know, crack elite team of military people in this brave new world that they live in. And
yeah.
it's all very convenient and all very, it's not, like I said, it's just, there's no subtlety to it.
There's
you
this,
know?
There's this like really terrible yeah. moment when they're like, we got to go back. Our dad's back there.
Yeah.
And the guy wearing ghost mech lifts it up and
yeah.
it's the dad. And
yeah.
you're like, oh, of course
like,
it is.
You know, he's right here. And then
yeah.
he like, well,
it's like, why would you say that?
Yeah.
Why would you hide that fact? Like this, like for the past minute and a half that they think that you're dead. It's so stupid. This was written by one of the same people who penned Syriana.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is a pretty decent film.
Yeah.
As well as like another really well-known, I think, Traffic?
Yeah, I think so. We looked it up. You could do a lot of stuff in a weekend, though.
Yeah.
You know?
I think
like, yeah.
that's what I got the sense. I got the sense that he's like, oh, I'm writing a Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Let me Wikipedia Black Ops 2 real quick. All right, here we go.
Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't, you know, the tagging a famous name onto it in the marketing campaign is just really counterproductive right. when it comes to this stuff. Because, you know, if you don't make people, like, why do we care about these people? You know, right. you kind of get to see their home being destroyed, but not really.
At least Black Ops 2 had Oliver North.
Got some legitimacy.
Oh, God.
It's just, you know, it's really, and the more compelling relationship is actually between the dad, Silas, and Rourke, because they were the ones that he actually, you know, there was kind of this Batman / Joker relationship between the two of them, where, like, he kind of inadvertently created Rourke by making the call to abandon him on a mission, then Rourke got captured and, you know,
brainwashed. Well, and then the Federation did their magical brainwashing technique.
Yeah. And so, you know, that kind of, like, turns them against the ghosts or whatever. But it's just, you know, none of the stuff that is supposed to be, like, the human connection really, you know, it's hard to feel too bad for Rourke, for me anyway, because at least the... What was the guy in Blops 2? Menendez! At least his family was caught up in the war. And at
there
least,
was, like, facial scarring.
Yeah, I mean, like, he had, issues. You know, baggage, and where it's, like, obviously Rourke does too, but you never really get to see that buildup.
Yeah.
And it focuses on these guys, one of which never talks. The other one is just kind of the brother, and the other one is this noble dad, you know?
Yeah.
And so when the inevitable moment comes when the dad dies, it's like, okay, well... I barely knew you and your relationship, but I guess this is supposed to be sad.
Yep.
Even so, we were joking around a lot about Riley, but, like, even Riley, they don't really do that much to set up the relationship between the dog and the people.
Yeah, that's. You know? You don't even have to try that hard.
No.
Like, the scene when you're carrying Riley,
yeah.
I just kept thinking, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, have him be alive so I can use him in battle.
Yeah. I mean, you don't see Riley being trained.
Yep.
You don't see Riley as a puppy. You don't see Riley, like, really saving the boys all that often. Like, it's... I don't know, you just get this sense that there's a bunch of backstory that you're supposed to assume is there, but you know, they never really earn it.
Was it even a noble sacrifice? I don't recall how he got injured.
He was out there after Rourke captures you and kills the dad and everything, you kind of start escaping and Riley goes ahead to try to hold off some people and you hear Riley get injured and then you come out to see him injured. So, I mean, you know, he's...
But
he gets injured
in
battle.
Like, he, like, grabs a grenade and runs off to save your life or anything.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
It's not even...
Yeah. I mean, he just gets injured in battle. Right. But then you have to carry him around.
Right.
Which, again, it would have been much better if they opened the game with you controlling Riley having to drag what's-his-face away from, like, a fire or something.
Yep,
and then
totally.
And then at the end of the game, you have to pick up Riley and save him. Like, creating a nice little narrative circle, because that's how storytelling works. Like... I just don't... Why? I mean,
this is free consulting.
Yes.
We're just giving the shit.
We're going to consult on Ghost 2, which, by the way, they've already set up at the very end.
Ugh, yeah. Yeah. It's so bad. And this gets me to one conversation I want to be sure we hit, which is, what the hell is the fucking point of having these single-player campaigns anyway? Like, it's not good. They phoned it in.
Yeah.
I'm sure this cost them a pittance compared to the overall thing that the game required.
I wonder.
It got a lot of complaints because it's relatively short compared to a lot of other shooter campaigns.
Yeah.
It's not part of, like, the wider narrative Call of Duty franchise.
Right.
This is in terms, narratively speaking, it's a whole new IP.
Right, yeah.
What the hell is the point? Like, why don't we just... Why don't they just admit that, look, first-person shooter, single-player stories... For things like Call of Duty, at least, are dead. It's okay if Infinity Wards make a purely multiplayer experience.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, well, because then we would never play it.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe, but so be it. Like, that's fine.
But, I mean, then they wouldn't get that sweet, sweet money.
We didn't buy it. I mean, you got it on, like, we rented it,
well,
right?
That's true,
I mean,
but I'd spend at least $4 American on this.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think there is... Some of it is kind of like a prestige thing. Pardon the pun. But, like, but, I mean, like, you have to... You know, to have a narrative wrapped around this also, to me anyway, one, it's kind of like a training simulator for the multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
A bad training simulator because it teaches us bad habits for the multiplayer.
Right.
But it's also, you know, it provides framing for the multiplayer. Like, you can kind of think of yourself as doing these epic things because you saw them in the single player.
Yeah, but, like, you know, so, for example, Halo 4 had these little vignettes that were somewhat narratively interesting, but they were themselves also... potentially multiplayer experiences. You could play them with friends.
Yeah.
They'd be short, almost like one-off episodes and part of a longer narration. And they could release these, you know, every month over month.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there are parts and aspects to the game that you can make to fill that single player experience mm-hmm. if you want
yeah.
without having to go into this whole, like, this is also a narrative and story driven experience when it's really not.
Yeah. Yeah. Like an episodic.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and also, like, I think that the more that I think about single player's absence from multiplayer experiences like Call of Duty, the more I think it just makes sense to do that anyway and then move towards a more, like, free to play model.
Which is what they were trying to. Remember they tried to launch, what was it? Call of Duty Elite?
Yeah.
And so, the, like,
subscription based.
Yeah, thing. We all thought this was, like, maybe it will be, who knows, but we all thought this was the beginning of kind of turning Call of Duty into Madden almost, right. where, like, you have seasons of Call of Duty, like, 2014 Call of Duty, here's the roster updates and here's the you know, weapon updates or whatever. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. The hard part is then you're like going, I guess, could Battlefield and Call of Duty both exist at that point? I don't know. I mean, I feel like the reason why I still play Call of Duty and not Battlefield is because I'll at least get to see what they're doing with the single player, because they show you all the new gadgets and stuff in the single player.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm never really going to be...
One that you're not going to get until you, like, play however X many hours
right. well, multiplayer. Exactly. And so, like, that's the value for me, because, like, I'm never going to sink 50 hours into the multiplayer, and I'm never going to get good enough to find that, like, drone strike kill streak. And so at least I can use it in the single player and kind of see what they're doing with
it. Well, but, like, look at things like Warframe or Mass Effect, right? Mm-hmm. Where the multiplayer is maybe a local co-op where you can play individually, but it's more of a squad-based experience that's, like, relatively short. You could still get access to some of the things you might in multiplayer, and you don't have to do it while, you know, being teabagged by 12-year-olds.
Right,
so it's, like, I think there are ways we can think around this dilemma and still give you access to really cool stuff without forcing you into the pipeline that is multiplayer, right? Like, even, you know, League of Legends has bot matches.
Yeah.
If you really want to play a bot, you can.
Right.
And then you don't have to have that experience with other players.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know, I feel like this really terrible single-player experience, I think, is reflective of something that they're just kind of... The inevitable is going to come, I think. Which is either you need to actually commit and have it be a good, compelling single player, or more likely, they're saying, look, we're still selling a shit ton of copies of this game, even though we put in very little effort into the single player. What is the return on investment in the single player experience anyway? Yeah. Let's start phasing that out.
Maybe we should try to, like, maybe they probably don't release this very often, but, like, it would be so fascinating to see, like, the achievement history and, like, see how many players hit the final chapter.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are, especially with Battlefield, like, you play Battlefield, you never even touch a single player, because why? Yeah. You're playing Battlefield. But, like, I mean, you know, I mean, that's the point. Yeah. And I think people approach it the same way for Call of Duty, but...
And people know that, too. That's the thing that weeds me out. Like, everyone knows that.
Yeah, but, I mean, I still think there are people like us, like, I'm always interested at, like, because Call of Duty is just this weird dark mirror that, like, for, like, American society, like, like a certain segment, like, what do we think about, like, militarization, and, like, what do we think about, like, big AAA games, and, like, just having this pulse, like, this check-in every year. Like,
no, yeah, I totally agree. Know? And again, like, Black Ops 2 has, I think, themes that I think are absolutely fascinating and we don't see in shooters. But if what this experience, if this experience from Infinity Ward, this Call of Duty Ghosts, is reflective of what's to come in terms of how they treat single player, then there's no point in going back. Because they've failed to deliver on, at least in my opinion, on a lot of the reasons I think that the stories in the Call of Duty franchise are interesting in the first place.
Well, and a lot of it is kind of, and I don't say this to be mean, but it's, like, gimmick-based. Like, remember in Modern Warfare 1 when your character died? It's like, whoa, that is amazing. Yeah. You know, I can't believe that. And, but, you know, that's, like, something that is shocking for the first couple times you do it. But, you know, it's harder to make that shocking. Like, it's harder to make a mechanical thing shocking like that over and over again.
That's true.
I mean, it gets so, like, specialized.
I just wanted them to bring McNamara back or something.
Right. <you know? laughs> Yeah, let's get in there. I mean, I think the other thing that is impressive, and I think this is somewhat of, like, a feat of engineering that is, I like, the Call of Duty single players are these amazing feats of, like, software engineering where, like, you're in the field, a soldier, and then all of a sudden you open up a HUD and the game rockets you up to a sky view of a plane. Like, no load time, like, whatever load time there is gets masked by the animation that seems logical to have in that context anyway. And there was a lot of that in the end parts of this game where you were just kind of going back and forth, like, okay, now you're in space, now you're in here. And, like, especially while playing like GTA 5 and seeing how they handle the transitions between characters, the load times are painfully obvious.
Yeah.
And this is just like seamless. Like, it's kind of amazing.
I mean, they did that in Modern Warfare 2, though.
Yeah, they did. But I mean, it's this one, I don't know. I feel like they're consistently getting faster and more extreme as to how they make these transitions.
Yeah.
And like, it's only for the people that are looking at it that carefully.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But I mean, that's such a small piece of the whole.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, even in Modern Warfare 2, when they did that, there was also, I think, interesting political rhetoric that they were making with that, right? When they had the sort of lobbed missiles and the distance it took before that actually landed, and all sorts of really cool stuff like that. Even in Black Ops 2, right? I mean, I think it's in Black Ops 2. One of the people gets injured because of how you aim one of your weapons.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I get the sense that, yeah, it's nice to have that, but they could still do that in other ways.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of do that in multiplayer, right? If you get an airdrop or a, you know.
But there's no way to control the message. Then you just have someone laughing at you rather than like, you know, and you can't like control the message by having like dramatic strings well up. And
that's very
you know,
true.
So, I mean, like if you want to make a point, then you have to like have someone take it so seriously in multiplayer, which is never going to happen. So like you
I
have
just
this
wonder how
thing.
Many people care about that anymore at the team. Like who who's at Infinity Ward right now who said like, I'm good. I'm happy with this. We don't have to touch on, you know, like, were there people that were shut up because they were like, no, that's not.
I mean, this game feels like a game that came out at the beginning of a console cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there are even things in the multiplayer. Like some of my favorite things from Black Ops aren't in the multiplayer, like the game modes and the various things you can do with, you know, squads and stuff. Like, I don't know. Like it feels like this was,
but it's on both though. Like, and they've had a decent while, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, we have to make sure that this works everywhere.
I see.
And, you know, we have to make sure that it works on the new consoles, which means we probably need to, like, you know, spend some more time making sure that it runs.
Right.
I don't know. I think there might be some. And, you know, the game looks great.
Yeah, like, it definitely does, yeah.
I mean, like, even, like, you can tell the character models that are more important than the others because their facial models look better. But, like, it looks excellent, you know, and so I mean they're clearly like doing their homework when it comes to that stuff. It's just, you know, what they do with
just
the story.
Reusing assets.
Well, yeah, I mean,
their massive asset library at this point.
I mean, the resources that go into this game, like 10 pages of credits in the instruction booklet and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's astonishing.
Yep.
And it's just what they tend to put those assets to is sometimes confusing.
Yes.
You know, like what. Why did you make those decisions, you know?
Yeah.
Need more Riley.
We do need more Riley. I don't know. I get the sense that, I mean, you're right. I think it's always worth looking back in Call of Duty, specifically because it's not only is it super well sold, but occasionally it does have really interesting things to say.
Yeah.
But like if I were to play the next Call of Duty and it were this again,
right?
I would be really strained to play the one after that.
Yeah. Because you know.
Fool me once.
Yeah. Fool, we can't get fooled again.
Yes.
Except when Ghost 2 comes out, which it will in like 2015, right?
Yeah.
Since they already set it up and at the end.
We can probably call it, November 15th.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, at this point, we're like truly in, you know, it's you can't tell like what the inflection point of Call of Duty is, but the next Call of Duty is going to be super important because by that time, what's the new mech game that's coming out?
Titanfall
is going to be out, and Bungie's new thing, it has the single word that I always
Destiny.
Forget, Destiny,
yes.
is going to be out. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's hard to tell where
both,
the inflection...
Both, by the way, both mostly multiplayer experiences, not single player.
Exactly. And, you know, kind of, you know, gunning for... Like, Call of Duty, after Call of Duty Ghosts, the series has never looked more vulnerable to me. And so, like, you know, like, this is, like, a huge year for other shooters.
I think that's really apt, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah. Like, if you want to pay attention of what's going to happen with AAA shooters over the next decade, pay attention to what's going to happen this next year.
Yeah. I mean, it could be Destiny for Bungie.
You're right.
Yeah, okay.
Activision could become Ghosts. I don't know. That was a bit of a stretch.
You should have said Call of Duty is a ghost of its former self.
There is a ghost dad in this game, I have to say.
There's a literal ghost dad.
That's good.
Yeah. I mean, again, I enjoy Call of Duties. It's fun to have, like, a yearly check-in. It just makes me appreciate Black Ops 2 way more, which is, like, kind of
weird,
yeah,
right?
And yeah. In the grand scheme of things, Black Ops 2 is actually a pretty interesting game.
Yep.
Who knew? All right, anything else we gotta
I think that's it.
Do? This briefing is over. Head on to space.
We have moon battles to fight.
Yeah. If you want to write in with your thoughts, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And there aren't any rules that say dogs can't be ghosts. So come check us. I don't know. That's a weird segue. Experiencepoints.net is our website. That's our space station.
Yeah.
We update Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday evening. So come on by. You can
faithfully update. Man's best friend.
We are loyal to the fault. You can check out more of our work over at PopMad Errors. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and YouTube.
Yeah.
So we encourage you to subscribe. Leave us a review. That's super nice if you do that. Yeah. There's a bunch of good reviews up there.
Yeah.
So thank you for those who did that.
Sorry for the puns this episode.
Oh, they'll never end, man.
They've been a little rough. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye. You should really shepherd the kid that one through.
Yeah. Riley, check this microphone.
Ruff!